1330 WEBY, Northwest Florida's Talk Radio. This is Your Turn, a live call-in show featuring spirited discussion and debate about issues that matter to the community. Stay with us to hear what Northwest Florida thinks. Better yet, call in at 623-1330 and tell us what you think. It's Your Turn here on 1330 WEBY, Northwest Florida's Talk Radio. Now, here's the host of Your Turn.
Well, trying to figure out what's going on with gas prices leaves a lot of us scratching our heads, myself included. I know I just took a trip up to Atlanta and back, and I was surprised by the disparity depending on where you were in the gas prices. I mean, occasionally on travel you'll see a 5-10 cent. I mean, I'm talking 20 cent difference in some places. And we've all certainly seen over the past 5 months the significant increase. In fact, I think it's been a 50% increase in the past 5 months in the price of gasoline. Here to help us try and understand what is going on, what drives the prices. It seems that this is a constant conversation that we're having, and hopefully we can get some more answers to those issues from Jack Refuse. He joins us this afternoon. He's the principal of the Refuse Organization. He advises government agencies, policy centers, businesses, and associations on energy, trade, sanctions, national security, and their interrelationships. He's got a wonderful background. He worked for the Navy Department Project Office. Here we are, a big Navy town here in the Panhandle, at the Center for Naval Analysis. He was with the White House Energy Policy Office, OMB, and the Federal Energy Administration. And for folks out there who are Notre Dame fans, you'll be happy to know that he received his master's and PhD from Notre Dame. So, Jack, welcome to the program. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much, Renee. I appreciate the opportunity.
Well, I'm going to ask you two questions with respect to gas prices to start it out.
Sure.
Why have they risen 50% in the past 5 months, and what does your crystal ball show you over the next five?
Okay, those are two very good questions. In some ways, they come up every year at about this time. It's a pretty interesting thing. But this year, there are a couple of things that make them even a little bit harder to understand, I think. Every year in March, all the refineries in the country have to switch over from winter gasoline, and they have to make summer gasoline. That's under federal, state, and local laws. So the switchover costs more, and summer gasoline costs more by itself. So that's one little thing. It happens every year. Now, you didn't really notice much increase in March this year when you typically would. You'd see it start, because March was really the low point of the stock market. You know, the recession seemed to be hitting hardest right then. So you probably didn't notice it as much in March as you would have in previous ones. But anyway, since then, you've certainly noticed it a lot. Chinese demand has gone up a lot, and that surprised people. And it went up because, of course, they can just sort of tell their factories to make more, and so they're trying to lead their way out of their recession, and so demand hit up considerably. It caught people by surprise. It began to get speculators, I believe, and other people to think that, okay, the recession's over, demand is going to go up all around the world, we ought to get in on this now. And so I think a lot of people who bid in the New York futures, or the Chicago futures market, are the ones who had that kind of theory behind it. I think those are really kind of the biggest reasons, and they're not really great reasons, because there's still, even though U.S. inventories have gone down, there's still a hangover of inventory bigger than usual in the past. So I think it's partly psychological, partly summer gasoline, partly speculation. And it reminds me of the old line in the movie Casablanca when Claude Rains says, round up the usual suspects. So it's either OPEC is a bunch of tricksters, or the oil companies are conspiring, or the evil speculators are doing it all. You can't really blame any of them. You just have to see that it's partly psychology and partly just the normal swings of the year.
How much does demand, I mean, the fact that people are traveling more, Does that play in? I mean, I, you know, here, of course, you know, when kids get out of school and there tend to be more people taking vacation, perhaps by car. And so I, you know, in the back of my mind, you know, I'm looking at your list of usual suspects and saying, okay, it's the oil companies. They know we're out there traveling, so they're raising the prices. It tends to start typically right around Memorial Day, coincidentally or not.
Right.
And we see it throughout the summer. But I never really understood that there is a switch from the winter to the summer gasoline. But again, I go back to, you know, how much do you think supply and demand has to do with it if it's based on the futures market?
Well, I think it's a combination of those things. The futures market is a way for people to guess what the price will be in the future. And so, you know, it's true that they'll speculate more because everybody knows that in the summer there is more driving. And so they figure that the prices will go up. The refiners have to work a lot harder because of making summer gasoline, but also because they're already pretty much stretched to capacity. So when you have to work your refineries harder, it does cost more. And it does come in the summer. There's no two ways about it. And people are, I don't know if they're happy, but people will definitely pay some more, and they'll say, what the heck was that about? But they won't stop going away on vacation, or it seems that they won't.
Right. Jack, the phone lines are lit up. May we take some calls?
Sure.
Okay, go ahead, Mike. It's your turn. You
there?
Hello, Mike. It's your turn.
Yes. I want to make a couple of statements and then see what you think of the accuracy of those. First of all, I think most of the gasoline in this country is stored in vehicles. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's true. You're right.
Okay. Secondly, I think that if something such as AAA advised to do so and people really cooperated with a lot of publicity, when the price goes up, if people who would fill up on Friday afternoon could wait till Monday afternoon, if people delayed the purchase, it would stop that supply chain that starts at the pump, at oil well heads, and ends at the gas pumps. It would stagnate everything back down the line, and prices would have to drop in recognition that we have a little control.
Well, I think it's a good point, and groups have tried to do that kind of thing before, but I think that if you consider it for a second, even say, for example, that everybody in the country did what you said they should do, that is, everybody who had more than a half a tank of gasoline, don't fill up until you're down to a quarter tank or whatever, you're probably putting a two-day glitch in there, and that's it. Because from then on, even if they're only going to fill up when they're down to three-quarters of a tank, you know, they're at that point now, and so it doesn't really impact their demand, I don't think. It just seems to for the first 2 days, and that's it. I mean, that's my feeling about that sort of thing.
Well, I was trying to insinuate that if you can exert a slight control, you can exert a further control by simply playing those people like by slowing the whole process down. They have to keep that. Everything is geared up to moving very slowly. It's like electricity. Electricity doesn't respond instantaneously. It responds over hours. Gasoline, oil production, gasoline refinement responds over weeks and months. And I think they would then, they being from wellhead to distribution point to the gas pump, would respond with a little more stability. Because we could respond as consumers to controlling their spikes and their valleys.
It's an interesting point, Mike. I mean, I think we maybe saw it play out a little bit, you know, several months ago when people really did cut back on their usage. And we did see prices go down a little bit. And, you know, again, they started to creep back up. But I do think you're right. I do think we can play some role. Again, you know, as Jack pointed out, it may be short term, but boy, even in the short term, it's nice to hold the reins.
Well, that's right.
If you could control
about several months ago, that was say you're back in March, that was kind of when things looked about the gloomiest, and people said, oh, my God, I'm not even going to go to the next town for vacation this year, and I'm going to start doing this and that, stuff that you could argue they should already be doing. Demand did go down, and it went down noticeably, maybe a couple of percent. So that's a very significant thing. And that was probably for a period of about 3 or 4 weeks, and that's pretty significant. But I think what Mike's suggestion is would only impact it for, as I say, maybe a couple of days. So I think it's a different thing.
Sure.
And we don't wish on ourselves bad economic times to so that we can really drive demand down.
Right. All right. Well, thanks, Mike. We appreciate the call. Okay. Go ahead, Bill. It's your turn.
Yeah, thank you. How come diesel is cheaper than gas now? Have you noticed that?
You know, I always look, of course, and the stations that I see, mostly in Virginia and the D.C. area, you're right. I'm not sure if it's any cheaper, but certainly the gap has closed a lot. That is more because the price of gasoline has gone up, whereas the price of diesel hasn't. And the diesel isn't forced to change from one kind of blend to another, and it's also a cheaper product. You know, it takes less refining to do. A big thing that has raised the price of diesel so much over the last 10 or 15 years is the taxes on it.
Oh,
of course,
I see.
The taxes haven't gone up right now, so I think probably that's the reason. Clearly, the price of gasoline has gone up. There hasn't been any unusual rise in demand for diesel, and so refiners aren't having to work to provide more of both. And so the differential is narrowed, and it could well be that in some states it's actually cheaper.
Okay, one more thing.
Yes.
What do you think about drilling for our own oil? You know, we hear that lame excuse that, well, it won't be online for 10 or 15 years, and then all of a sudden 2015 gets here, and we're going to hear the same thing. Well, it's not going to get online for another 10 or 15 years.
You know, first
2025 comes, and they'll say, well, it ain't going to come online for another 10 or 15 years.
Oh, that's right. The first time that Congress put a stop to offshore leasing by clamping down on the Interior Department's planning budget, and that's the way they've always done it. There's not a law against it. There's just they always do it through the budget. Anyway, it was 29 years ago. And you're right. I mean, if you had continued to go along at the same time, then three of those 10-year periods that wouldn't have mattered would never have been there. Now, I do think there's another thing about this, though. I think there are a couple of other things. One, Chevron made a gigantic strike 2 or 3 years ago now in the Gulf, and that should be coming on probably within another year. It does take a long time for these things to come on, but the fact is, with the deep water incentives that were out there since the Clinton administration, they were able to invent stuff so that they could drill in 4 miles of water and then go another mile and a half under the surface to get a gigantic reservoir down there. So there have been things coming along. Those will help a lot. And then I think the other thing about this is what we were just talking about on the price stuff is the psychology of it. I think if people in this country and around the world see that the United States is serious about developing some of its own resources, then they will feel they're losing a little bit of control, and I think that will make them act a little bit more rationally as world citizens, if you will.
Yeah, that's what I was going to bring up. If we could put the fear of God in them and say we're going to drill and we're going to get independent, that would shake up the Middle East, wouldn't it?
Don't you mean the fear of gas?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, say again?
The fear of gas. I interrupted. I apologize. But what he's saying is exactly the point that you made, Jack, which is, you know, if we became less energy dependent, you know, we may find that some of these folks might be a little bit nicer toward us.
Yep, I think so.
Yeah, reverse psychology, Renee. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
Put the fear of God in them.
There you go. All right, we do need to take a very, very quick break. When we come back, we have another caller on hold. And I do want to get to the issue. You know, recently former UN Secretary General Kofi Annan, blamed many of the world's problems on global warming and these, and essentially the psychology, these issues that we've been talking about. So hopefully we'll have some time to discuss that as well. Again, we're only going to have a couple minutes left when we come back from the break, so we hope you'll stay with us.
Now, back to your turn on 1330 WEBY, Northwest Florida's Talk Radio. The phone lines are open, so call in and join the conversation at 623-1330.
We are talking with energy expert Jack Rafuse. To learn more about him and the work that he does, visit him on the web at www.jackrafuse.com. That's JACKRAFUSE.com. Go ahead, James, it's your turn.
Yes, thanks for taking my call. I'm all for drilling, and I think we should build more refineries, but I'm also for more conservation, and it seems like, you know, the people in this country have got to realize, you know, if we don't learn to save fuel, if we don't learn to conserve, you know, it's just going to continue to go up, and I don't like it when gas prices go high, you know. It's going to hurt me when I go out of town for the 4th of July. But I guarantee when I go down I-10 and I set my cruise control to 68 to 70, every single car that passes me is going to blow me right off the highway.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's right. On the other hand, you say that you're very interested in conservation.
I think
if you set it at 55 instead of 68 or 70, you'd save a lot of gasoline, and they would go by you faster, but that's their lookout.
But this is my question, though. Let's say that you and I could get every single American to drive the speed limit for one day,
uh-huh.
Not go a mile over the speed limit. How many barrels of oil could we save in that one day?
Wow.
Well, I think just using the numbers that you were, that is to say 68 to 70 as compared to 55, and 55 is probably the speed limit in most places. I know there are a few places where it's 75 and 65, but I think the side roads and everything else, if you stuck to the speed limit everywhere, actually, I would guess that we'd probably save 15 to 18%, and that would be 1.5 million barrels a day.
Yeah, but, I mean, if you go 70 and drive the speed limit down the interstate, you're a brave soul, because you're going to get run over.
I know.
But my whole argument is, you know, I hear all these people, you know, they want to speed, drive 20 miles an hour over speed limit, tailgate people, and yet...
Yeah.
Those same people, they whine and complain when gas goes to $3-4 a gallon. I mean, I get so upset, you know. Every time I turn around, somebody's whining about, do you know the profits ExxonMobil made last month? yeah, because of you.
Well,
they,
you know,
believe me, ExxonMobil's happy that you're tailgating. But
last
that's just
year,
the argument.
ExxonMobil made $49 billion in profits. Do you know how much Americans spend on their pets, their dogs and cats, in a year?
What?
$49 billion.
Oh, my gosh.
And actually, this year, that will probably, it's been going up at about 4 or 5% a year. This year, it'll be like probably $52 billion, and Exxon's not going to make $52 billion this year.
All right, so now you're telling me I got to drive slower and get rid of my dog.
No, you don't have to get rid of them. You just need to know. I'm not going to get rid of mine either.
You don't need to get rid of your dog.
Just
drive the speed limit.
Maybe I just need to walk my dog, and that would take care of all of it. All right, James, thanks for the call. We're going to go ahead and take Ted's call. Thanks, James. Go ahead, Ted. It's your turn.
Hey, thank you very much. I've got a little bit of experience with this gas, but something is mystifying me, and that is what you call a winter blend, because basically... I was a contractor for 28 years working with one of the oil companies, and essentially they process oil all the way from Bunker C up through the kerosene grade, and then the next grade is fuel grade, and the variations in the octane is, takes place at the terminal when they load the truck to send it to the service station. So what are they doing as far as winter blending, summer blending?
Well, it's several things, and you're right. Much of it takes place outside of the refinery, but it takes place at those same company's facilities. And, for example, you have to use more ethanol in gasoline in the summer than you can in the winter. Like in Denver, if you had ethanol in your car, the gas lines would freeze. But so that's one of the things that changes a lot. And there are several things, several of those kind of related things, many of which are done at the terminals and not in the refinery. There is some in the refinery, but some of it is not.
Well, like
all
the previous caller was
the
indicating
gasoline
also,
moves across the country by pipeline.
One of our
all of the ethanol
local
moves by truck because you can't put it into a gasoline pipeline because it's always got water in it or it attracts water, and that would screw up everything everywhere. And so it's much more expensive to move that stuff.
Yeah, actually, when they transmit from the refinery through the pipeline system, water is actually introduced into the various deliveries of the separating device. In other
that's
words,
right.
Some
that's because it doesn't mix
take,
with gasoline or with oil.
Second?
That's because water doesn't mix with gasoline or oil, and so you can
correct
do that. Whereas if you put ethanol in there, you know, ethanol is vodka, basically. And you can mix vodka and water, and it becomes one thing. Gasoline and water don't mix. So it's a very significant difference.
Well, I understand if you mix ethanol with the gasoline, that actually it would help break down water so that they'll actually blend because the alcohol will mix with the water and the alcohol will also mix with the gasoline, and it turns into being a method of absorbing that water. But the other thing that the previous caller indicated was the fact is
And Ted, we got about 10 seconds left.
Okay. The biggest thing I think we need to do is go ahead and drill everywhere that's possible. There's a million oil wells already capped off in this country that are not producing that have been capped off for that purpose.
All right. Thank you, Ted. We appreciate the call. Sorry, Ed, we can't get to yours. And Jack, thank you so much for your time today. We'll have you back on. Obviously a popular guest. Thank you, Jack, so much.